Yes, sit wherever you like. Madam, madam, I'm talking to you. Yes, sit, sit, sit. Ah, there you are. Now stay on your buttocks while I introduce this all-new primetime quiz show that has all of Carpathia talking. It's Guess Which Monster? That's right, we've got Dracula, the Mummy, the Wolfman, Frankenstein's Monster, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, Hannibal Lecter, a gaggle of stage mums, people who wear hats ironically or in lieu of a real personality, and some of Piers Morgan's flesh sacks. And each week we're asking you, the audience, a series of questions to see if you can guess that monster. If you guess correctly, you have to go through the castle assault course while your monster of choice chases you, flinging foam pies at you. And if you escape, then you win a Ford Effluent, 300 Peruvian nose dollars, and a chance to play in the tournament of Helsings at the end of the season, where the prize is a mauve roll neck sweater that can be exchanged at Macy's for a $27 gift card. So, Barbara, Babs, Babette, the Babster, please pick our first unsuspecting nitwit. I mean, delightful audience member from this crowd of hobos. I mean people.
Alan, this is Gerald. He's an extruder apprentice from East Cheam who likes bowling, hairstyles of 1970s, porn stars, and fornicating with pastries.
Nobody cares. So, Gerald, here's your starter for 10. Which monster am I?
You're Alan Bensley. I was to guess
no,
which
Gerald,
monster.
No, Gerald, I... No.
What do I win?
Gerald, I hadn't asked the question yet.
Oh.
Which monster am I? Once a month, when the moon's a circle, I go a little berserkal.
Oh, I know this one. It's my Aunt Yolanda. She always goes a little berserk once a month. She used to steal all my chocolate and shave my dolls.
No, Gerald, it isn't your Aunt Yolanda.
Oh.
Here's your next clue. Teeth and hair and a tail have I, but only when the moon's full in the sky.
Oh, yeah, my neighbour, Greg Falafel.
Gerald, do you understand what you're trying to do here? Do you honestly believe that we have your neighbour, Greg Falafel, behind the screen?
He invented the telescope.
No, Gerald, he didn't.
This guy's a moron.
Quiet, monster!
Let me suck his blood.
No, not live on telly.
I want to rip his arms off. Your clues couldn't be easier. Everyone and their second cousins could have figured it out by now. I grow weary.
Let me decapitate the fool and feed on his jellies.
Go back behind the screen, Count. You were meant to be the answer to round two. Now I have to go wake up the mummy, and you know what she's like when she doesn't get at least a good 1,000 years. Shut eye.
For centuries I have ruled over the dark hills and scared villages of idiot peasants and superstitious cretins. And you, Alan of Bensley,
deny me a feast from this imbecile's flappy bits.
Stand aside, or I will pay a visit to Barbara's chambers later and seduce her with my hypnotic eyes and rather sexy cape.
I wouldn't mind that.
Be quiet, Babs.
I quite like capes. They're so fashion-forward.
Don't be ridiculous. He looks like a pair of curtains a particularly irritating goth kid might insist is put upon mother by for their basement. Dracula, if you don't go sit down and leave poor absent-minded Gerald alone, I will have to wave this cross at you or make some garlic bread.
What is going on?
Nothing, Gerald. Here's a lollipop. Now go sit back down, will you? You too, Dracula.
This game is stupid. You should have let me eat his face.
You're stupid. I mean, imagine being defeated by a pungent bulb used for seasoning Italian food. I mean, it's not like the Wolfman's scared of shallots or Frankenstein's monster is shooed away by the appearance of a radish.
Don't be so vampirist. I have my rights.
What you have is a pair of flared nostrils and a mortgage on an old windy castle you still haven't paid off.
I shall turn into a bat.
Please do us all a favor. At least a bat can't keep talking.
I shall turn into a bat and while you sleep, poop on your forehead.
Well, that's all we have time for tonight on Guess Which Monster. Tune in next week when, along with the Predator, a Xenomorph, and a nuclear mutated ant, we're going to have everyone who's ever appeared as a judge on X Factor, America's Got Talent, and Dancing with the Stars. Oh, yes, and the host of the After Movie Diner.
You're listening to the After Movie Diner with your host, John Cross.
That's right, I am John Cross, and if this is my bedroom voice, can you imagine what my non-bedroom voice is like? Agonizing. Welcome, ladies, ladies, more ladies, the ladies at the back, the ladies that are all front. Any ladies, don't be stupid. No ladies, listen to this. Don't argue with me, Barry. Who's Barry? Barry is my subconscious, of course. Well, welcome, Barry. Why, thank you, John. You're welcome, Barry. You said that, John. Now you're repeating yourself. Well, these intros are hard to write every week. No one is asking you to write them, John. In fact, many people would prefer that you didn't. At least 42 have already turned off during that ridiculous comedy sketch at the beginning of the show. I know, right? I feel like such a failure. And a rabbi named Felix, who keeps a lot of old lint under his big old hat. Welcome one, and welcome all. This episode is the third of four podcast episodes dedicated to the films of Hammer Studios, the British film company of the 50s, 60s and 70s best known for their horror films. And it's rather wunderbar. We will also be having new articles on aftermoviediner.com from the bloke down the pub, our resident Hammer horror reviewer. Now, before we get to discussing this week's film, a quick reminder that you can support the After Movie Diner in many ways, but one of them is going over to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/aftermoviediner, and becoming a patron of the show. Just like the brand new patron, Joseph Charlesworth. A huge thank you to you, sir. Also, previous patron, Micah Johnson, could you please get in touch via email? I want to send you your t-shirt and need your size and address. Thanks. You can also make a one-time donation by clicking the Buy Us a Coffee button on aftermoviediner.com. You can also click the amazon.com link on our website before you do your shopping and bookmark that as your Amazon link on your browser so that every time you make a purchase and at no extra cost to yourself, Amazon slips us a few highly tickled farthings. Also, if you like music, you can go to miskplumbingfixtures.bandcamp.com, that's M-I-S-C, plumbingfixtures.bandcamp.com, and get yourself an album or seven. Every single cent goes to keeping the website and this podcast afloat on this uncertain sea, on a turbulent internet, part of a fractious world that may or may not be all down to the proliferation of arrogant, worthy vegan cyclists. Just piss off, you sanctimonious bastards. Learn how to use a traffic light and then we'll talk. If you have no money, simply rate and review the show on iTunes or wherever podcasts are found. Now, without further release of noxious gases and incredibly flared trousers, to a diner somewhere in the heart of New York's City.
Hello. And welcome
That's
to...
That's so the opposite of how you're actually feeling right now.
What is?
Hello.
I didn't say it like that. I went, hello.
No, there was a little bit of joy.
There was a little bit of joy in there. Okay. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the After Movie Diner. And yet again, I am with the wonderful, gregarious, and annoyingly faced Jim Wallace.
Hello.
And
Thanks for having me again.
We are in the Good Stuff Diner.
We are.
Good stuff. Good stuff's happening. Actually, there's nothing good. And we have just
Anywhere, nothing good.
And we're recording this on the eve of the 7th anniversary of the podcast, even though you won't hear this until mid-August.
I have a birthday present for you.
You have a birthday present for me?
Yeah, for the diner.
For for the diner.
For you.
For me.
Yeah. So it just goes to show that even though... The Kmart DVD section has shrunk to like one basket.
Where? Oh, the Kmart. In
34th Street. It shrunk to like one basket behind like a thing.
Behind another thing. Right, underneath a...
There is still...
Enclave of
There are
dwarves.
Still joys wow, that can got, only be found in Kmart to, be,
got,
to be had.
You got me a DVD?
I did.
Okay, so we've been together all evening. You haven't mentioned this.
What? No. I wanted to give it to you for the diner, didn't I?
Aww.
Tell me how I could not get you this.
Wow.
Right?
There's seven movies on here.
Yeah, but look at the one that's... I've never even heard of this movie.
From the producer of Star Wars and the director of Tron, Mark Hamill, Bill Paxton and Ben Kingsley in Slipstream. And this particular box set includes seven bonus movies.
Including films with Stacey Keach and I think an early...
Tracy Lords, Thomas Ian Griffith.
An early Oz thriller, because it's got Mel Gibson in an uncredited
role. The Chain Reaction, yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Dean Cain in a movie called Militia.
And Tracy Lords as a hotshot FBI agent.
Oh, yeah, because she's
transporting a prisoner, which gets interrupted by an earthquake, which frankly sounds like an amazing plot to a film to me. But Slipstream looks like some kind of post-apocalyptic...
Yeah, a bounty hunter kidnaps a fugitive from the custody of law officer Tasker after learning there is a price on the killer's head. To avoid detection, Owens flies into... It's written in really poor font, sorry. Flies into a volatile post-apocalyptic slipstream. If he hopes to make it out alive, he'll have to face pursuing officers, a religious cult that holds the wind sacred, and the unknowns of the mysterious slipstream itself.
Now, how could you not own that movie?
Well, fantastic. Very good. I haven't even opened the menu yet. Sorry.
We'll get there
in a minute. That is right? Fantastic. Isn't Thank you very amazing? Much. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday to the
So literally good stuff is happening.
Yeah.
But no, the listening several will not hear this episode until mid-August.
No.
But it's a joyous occasion. And we are now knee-deep. Not quite waist deep, but deeper than three movies in, so we're pretty much
waist deep in
our horror month, which will be the whole month of August, will be Hammer month. Thank you to the Quad Cinema who have been screening Hammer horror films. And just to explain, we recorded a couple of podcasts about early Hammer films back in late June, early July, when the Quad was running that series. They're now running ones on later Hammer films, and we thought, why not just save them all up together and put them all together in a month? So that's what we're doing. As you already listened to 2.5 podcasts at this point, you already know that, so I'm not quite sure why I'm explaining it. But as I indicate, we are recording this prior to when you're listening to that. That is how podcasting works. We have to record it prior to you listening to it. You can't listen to it before we've recorded it. That's not a thing.
This is becoming a lot more
surreal and bizarre. Meta. Anyway, we went to see The Scars of Dracula.
Scars of Dracula.
The Scars of Dracula. The scars caused by Dracula, not the scars of Dracula.
The scars,
Dracula,
in brackets, caused by scraping of the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
Dracula.
Caused by...
The scars of barrel scraping.
The fake bat puppet.
Why they
Dracula.
Thought that building an entire film around that bat effect
no idea.
Was a good idea.
No idea.
Who went, did they go, we'll build it around a bat? Because really... See the effect first,
right,
and then decide, do we want to hang the whole movie?
Have you already sipped from that? Or is...
I haven't sipped from anything. I've sipped from nothing,
one.
Mate.
Just because there's more in this one. That seems to indicate...
It arrived pre-sipped. That they sipped it before they put it down.
I think you sipped it, and I don't want anything to do with your dirty, dirty face, lip...
Wash.
I don't want anything to do with your filthy lip germs.
My leftover popcorn mouth debris.
Whatever you just said, I'll have none of it, and I'll have even less than none of it. But yes, so none of it, which is a wonderful place in the Northern Territories. Isn't it? None of it? Isn't that a place in the Northern Territories of Canada? None of it? I've got a feeling that it's an Inuit... enclave.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. It's certainly an Inuit word, I think.
Okay. I believe you.
I tell you what, I'm having none of it. But I'm Inuit. I'm into it, but I'm having none of it.
I'm not sure what to have. What are you thinking?
I'm sure people have made these puns before. You're not even listening
to it. I tuned out a while ago. Only in favour of the...
Have I had the bolognese here before?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I just don't fancy a burger.
I know, I can't really see any... I guess I could go for a sandwich.
I could have breakfast. But I don't fancy breakfast either. I kind of fancy a bolognese.
I think that's okay to do that.
Bit expensive though, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be horribly filthy like you and have some sort of grubby omelette, which is normally the way you go. At the end, at the back.
Oh, that's why I'm getting... Here we go. Yeah. Here we go.
You're the one who always seeks out some filthy, grubby omelette.
Fetid omelette. Can I have your fetid omelette? Fetid.
Fetid. Some filthy...
City frittata.
Some filthy
plum
stench.
Tomatoes.
Oh, he's already found one, ladies
there
and gentlemen.
There it is.
He's already found it.
There it is, a city frittata. Plum tomatoes, mozzarella, Italian sausage and basil.
Nobody knows what you're saying.
I don't know what that is either, but I'm definitely having it.
We are already confused.
I know that they think that diced ham, that it's an ingredient, but for some reason, diced ham just sounds like a euphemism for puke. Do you know what I mean?
Well, because when they used to do fake puke in, comic books, it would always have, chunks of tomato and diced ham. As if somehow you eat ham and your stomach goes, while I'm at it, I'm just going to dice that up before you throw it back
diced
up
ham.
Again.
Diced ham. Yeah. Starring Diced Ham.
Starring Alan Chin as Diced Ham.
You'll never get away with it. We'll see if I won't ham.
He's a little bit dicey and a little bit hammy.
The name's Ham. Diced. Yep, I'm getting a city frittata and a cup of tea. So the other one...
Can you go,
Day the Sky Exploded.
Could you
starring,
say, don't go back to that.
No, wait.
Could you say City Frittata?
City Frittata.
Okay.
Have a look.
Don't go back to this. Nobody cares. Nobody can even see it.
Look, The Day the Sky Exploded, starring
Paul Hubschmidt.
Hubschmidt. That's a great name for it. But I like the word starring.
Starring
Paul Hubschmidt.
The famous.
We're not
Paul
fucking
Hubschmidt.
Around with this, right? Hubschmidt's in this one.
Hubschmidt.
Seriously.
Hubschmidt. Yeah. This is incredible. They do sliders here, and the variety within the slider, one has American cheese, one has bacon, and one has Swiss cheese. Oh, the variety to the
actually,
sliders.
Actually, no, I mean, I was actually thinking of that. That's how exciting I am.
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting a city frittata.
City frittata.
City frittata.
City frittata.
Whoops, city frittata.
Whoops,
yeah.
City frittata. Why do they put Japanese mushrooms in a bolognese?
I don't know, mushrooms got to come from somewhere, don't they?
No, but regular mushrooms. Or Mediterranean.
Don't they mean shiitake?
Yeah.
Shiitake mushrooms.
That's what I said, Japanese mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms.
Oh,
shiitake.
Oh, I've had a shiitake. I got a right shiitake.
I tell you what, I ate that city frittata.
City frittata.
And I got a shiitake. I cannot decide what I want, which I know is annoying you because you want to get on with this and get home.
Kind of, yeah. Well, I know what I want. So I.
Give me a second. No,
I know what I want.
I know what I want. Could I get a city frittata?
Home fries and white toast?
No home fries and whole wheat toast.
Thank you.
And could I also get an English breakfast tea with milk? Thank you very much.
I have two eggs over easy with the ham and French fries.
You got white toast?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, dude.
I fell back onto an old favourite. I just went back to an old favourite because if in doubt... Well,
the favourite part.
True. Well, it's much like the podcast. If in doubt, fall back on an old favourite. And luckily, you're there for me to fall onto every week.
Yes, I am. That's what I'm here for, mate.
Much like some sort of...
For seven weird years.
Well, no, you haven't been doing it for 7 years.
I haven't, have I?
No, the first...
Even though I lived across the street from you, you studiously ignored me for a year and a half,
no,
2 years.
No, you were episode 10, dude.
No, the TV special was in episode 10.
Episode 10 is the one where we talked about how shit The Walking Dead was.
We knew back then.
7 years.
Way back then.
7 years
way
before
it was fashionable.
Say, yeah. Listen, I hate things way before other people get on board.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very much upfront and modern with my hating.
Yeah,
things.
You're almost, yeah.
Because I
ahead of the hate curve.
There's that old Bill Hicks thing about, people have forgot to judge properly. Stand back, take a deep breath, piece of shit, and get on with your life, right? So there was I think maybe even you have said this to me, but like when it comes to movies or TV shows or whatever it is, they're like, well, you know, it takes time to get going, you've really got to get into it and blah 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 blah. For me, my gut, because I have literally no time, like I really have no time, what with movie nights and podcasting and planning a wedding and having a 9-to-5 job and all the other stuff that I do, editing and writing and everything else, I really have no time to be wanking or wasting around with nonsense that takes 15 episodes to get going. If it's not good in the first 20 minutes, if I'm not like, oh yeah, I'm going to watch it, within 20 minutes I know if I'm going to like something or not.
So on that, just for a bit of seamless transition.
Yeah.
What did you think of Scars of Dracula?
Scars of Dracula. Well, it's mostly awful.
It is mostly awful.
I have to say, I tell you what, the caveat to it being mostly awful is that it's unfortunate that it's mostly awful, yeah, because it does contain some bits.
It's got two of my favourite Hammer characters ever, I think.
Oh, really? Who are they?
Yeah. Trout and the assistant.
Clove. Patrick Troutman, who spent his entire career playing grubby men. Yeah. Like his entire, what I looked him up on IMDb as we were walking over here, and I was like, "Where do I know him from?" Doctor Who, right? But, and he's slightly cleaner in Doctor Who than he is in anything else. But I know him from an exceptionally grubby performance in an Inspector Morse, where I'm sure he plays Alan Grubby Man. Jeff Grubby.
He's
gentleman.
A blackmailer, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I think. But he's like wears a like a.
He, no, no, but he's. I think not only that, but I think he's in one of the. No, he's in the very first episode, Death of Jericho.
Yeah, you're right.
Dead of Jericho.
Yeah.
He plays a grubby man who has a grubby cardigan who lives across the road in a particularly grubby house.
Right. Well, but he's the reason I love him in this one, right, is...
The monobrow?
His journey within the movie is by far the most interesting thing that's happening, because he's the bloke that gets, like, burned by Dracula and whipped, and he's just, you know, loyal, but...
Well, lean
know,
forward and tell people... Sorry. A bit louder.
Oh, yeah, what happens in the movie?
No. Just tell them he plays Clove, which I feel like...
Clove has been in movies before, but not played by Patrick.
Not played by Trevor.
He is, like, Dracula's assistant.
I've got a feeling that Clove is the name of the butler in Prince of Darkness, the one that we watched.
No, he definitely is.
Like, the like, tombstone-faced older dude.
It's presumably... If he's cropped up in two, either they, like... Because, like, this... I'm pretty sure that the movie before this one is Taste the Blood of Dracula.
Which is quite good, I remember.
It is quite good.
Is that the one with the, like, greeny and purpley, like they suddenly do all this Italian giallo-style camera work?
Possibly, maybe. I don't really remember.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Maybe, yeah, actually. But that one ends...
Or is that the one with the businessmen who go to, like, a whorehouse and try and get...
That's Taste the Blood of Dracula.
Oh, that's not as good.
No, Taste the Blood's good. He goes to.
It's got the Last of Summer Wine guys.
Yeah, all right. That's a good one. But
it's that, okay.
No, I like that one. You should watch it again. It's good.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not a classic. There's not that many where. There's actually not that many Draculas.
Right.
With the castle, you know, heaving bosoms, carriages, whatever. Where. Christopher Lee talks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, his actual Dracula. Like, hardly any, actually.
Well, also, this is what's hilarious about Hammer Horror and Christopher Lee in general, is that Prince of Darkness, which, all right, is not fantastic, but it's a pretty good, you know, strangers end up at a castle and Dracula bumps them off one by one while there's a, like, you know, tombstone-faced butler hanging around and a few people in the village who are like, don't go near the castle. Like, it's a pretty good standard Dracula film. And Lee read it and went, no, I'm not saying anything. I'm miserable and I'm going to be miserable. But then by the time you get to this one, which has, I mean, possibly one of the worst scripts ever written.
It's dreadful.
It's utterly dreadful.
Did you notice that the same scene happens twice? Like, Waterman and the blonde turn up in the pub.
Right.
And the lad goes, oh, you've got to get out of here. Well, at least let the girl stay. Oh, she's going to go with you. And they throw them out. And they go up to the castle, blow it. And then they come back. And they come back into the pub.
Yeah.
And the lad goes, oh, get out of here. Chucks the bike out. He goes, well, at least let the girl stay. No, she's going to go with you. We just did that like 10 minutes ago.
No. But there are so many occasions where that's the case in this movie.
Ugh.
There's so many
references. So this is what... This is so... Very quickly.
But no. So what's funny is... he won't speak in Prince of Darkness, which I actually think is a pretty good Dracula movie. It lacks Peter Cushing, but it's a pretty good Dracula movie.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's the second one they made.
Yeah.
And although I still say the best two are the first one they made and the last one they made, I still say they're the best two. But in this one, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm perfectly happy to speak and make a series of ludicrous faces in this one.
No, he's almost parodying some of the... Like, when he can't look at the cross, I don't know, it was almost comic.
Oh, no. So, I mean, this is... It's 1970 this one comes out, and I get the feeling this was where Lee just went, well, you know, I've got to pay for tweed and hairpieces, so I might as well just agree to be in anything. Because I feel like this is the period where, you know, we're not too far away from him agreeing to be in, like, The Howling 2 or 3 or whatever Howling he's in. And
he was in some like horrible like European cheap horror as well.
Yeah. And he plays like Sherlock Holmes on German television for like notoriously two of the worst Sherlock Holmes adaptations ever made. He's in, at this period of time, he's in a bunch of like Jess Franco movies that are like pervy and terribly made. This is just the point where Clue's like, well, you know, what do I... Lee is just like, well, what do I need to maintain my Mercedes and my...
Well, he had some sway. Like, I know that, for example, Rasputin the Mad Monk
right.
made because he agreed to make Prince of Darkness, I believe.
Right.
And obviously he
But that's still in the
Rasputin.
Golden era. That's
yeah, yeah, but that's
the,
what
like,
I'm saying. Like, he was like, I've got power, I'm a big draw.
Right.
So what... I'll make that movie if you let me make this one, basically.
Right, but what was his payoff for this one?
Nothing. Literally nothing.
I will act with the feeblest rubber bat ever committed to...
Here's the problem, right? They can't be bothered to pretend it's nighttime, like ever.
Well, we'll get to that, but yeah.
Should I do a quick rundown of the plot?
Do a quick rundown of the plot, and then we'll go in.
Okay, so the plot basically... begins at the end of Dracula movies. In other words, a girl gets killed, a mob gets together, they go up to the castle, they burn it down, but at one point in the burning the castle down, they go, that's enough fire.
That's enough
go
fire.
Now.
We don't need to wait.
He's probably dead.
Probably dead.
Yeah. I mean, even though he's stalked the land for decades now, and we've killed him multiple times every time he's come back, this time, even though we haven't actually seen him die, that's probably
There's
enough.
Literally a line in it where where they're burning down the castle... And
the legendary Michael Ripper,
there's literally
who also deserves better than this.
Yeah, Michael Ripper goes, that's enough, come on, we're leaving now.
That'll do.
And we're like, wait, because you can never have it. Apparently,
but
you can have
it. The world's most cowardly priest.
Yeah.
He's the worst Hammer priest.
Also...
All the priests in every
also,
Hammer
Also, he is played by the con artist from Fawlty Towers, Lord Mowbray.
Oh, yeah.
Same actor.
Yeah.
Well, and you can tell...
Bloody terrible.
You can tell because of his giant facial wart.
So anyway, on their way back, they have... while they were burning the castle down, they stowed their womenfolk in the church.
Yeah.
And they get back to the church, full of the joys of burning Dracula.
Yeah. And then
only
the priest
discover,
being all sanctimonious, being like, oh, the Lord protected us, you know.
So they arrive back at the church, and they discover that a room full of...
Lovely, thank you.
Look at the size of this. Lovely.
Magic. Thank you.
Look at that. Brilliant.
City
Frittata. God, it's enormous. This is brilliant. Go on, I've got purple left. I've missing purple left.
Purple broccoli, it looks like.
It's quite smart. Anyway.
Jim is excited by...
Very excited by my flat omelette. So the church is full of unrealistic bats, and they've eaten everybody. Now, to be fair, the scene where all the dead women who've been like had their eyes clawed out and lying over like church halls and stuff is pretty cool.
So there's two things. One, that's a really great idea to have them all come back from burning down the castle full of their own smug, you know, lord worship and nonsense, only to have the church overrun with like bats that have killed all the women. Like, that's a particularly dark, gruesome idea. And also, to be fair to Hammer, although special effects were never their strong suit, the gore and the thing is pretty full on. Like, there is blood spatter up the walls of the church. You see all the women have had like eyes poked out. And
however, if I, the problem is that, and it's a problem with most of the film, actually, is that even though they go to all this trouble to basically create a village full of scaredy cats, you don't want to take on Dracula for fear that, well, you know, they've already lost everything.
He'll
right?
set their comically flat, fat bats.
Right. It leads nowhere.
No.
None of them confront Dracula. All they do is just throw people out of the pub. So well, why did you have that opening?
Well, yeah, because what happens is, you have that opening, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, they insert about seven scenes from, you know, Carry On Castle.
Carry On Burgermaster. Carry On the Burgermaster.
Or like
Bird.
Whoops Burgermaster.
Whoops Burgermaster, yeah.
Or some kind of horrible British sex farce from the 1970s. Like, it's literally like Hammer does On the Buses. And I think Hammer did make On the Buses the movie.
They did.
Yeah. But it's literally like there's a hangover from that, where Dennis Waterman, that Brits will know from The Sweeney, and Minder,
who is horribly miscast.
Right.
He can just about pull off, like, Cheeky Chappy. But, like, dark and soulful is not Dennis's strong suit.
No, definitely not. Also, as he's having real difficulty hiding his Cockney accent throughout the whole thing. Because people who don't know Dennis Waterman, he sort of talks like that. He's a bit of a cheeky chappy.
Oh, a cheeky chappy.
And he did a song, which was the song for the TV show Minder.
He did theme tunes for all of his stuff.
He didn't do The Sweeney. The Sweeney's just...
No, but he did the theme tune for New Tricks. That was him.
New Tricks?
It was like a BBC detective show about, like, old grumpy policemen.
Oh, he did that?
And he did the theme tune.
I didn't see that one.
Which is a blatant rip-off of End of the Line, a Traveling Wilburys song, that somehow he gets away with, but I don't know how. It's all right, it's okay. Doesn't really matter if you're old and grey. It's all right, I say, it's okay. Listen to what I say. It's all right, doing fine. Doesn't really matter if the sun don't shine. It's all right, I say, it's okay. We're getting to the end of the day.
Wow, Jim's not wrong there.
I take low tech, take your pick. Cause you can't teach an old dog a brand new trick. I don't care what anybody says.
At the end of the day,
there's a place that I can't find. Drink or two to ease my mind.
All right, Dennis, just stop it.
Anyway... The point being, after the church
thing, point being
it
awful.
Jumps to sex comedy where Dennis Waterman's brother gets into a bit of strife with the Burgermaster and then runs off from his birds, well, his brother's birds, but also his bird likes. Anyway, he runs away from his brother's bird's birthday party. The female lead is played, and I have seen a lot of Hammer films, and I can tell you comfortably... that she is the worst actress Hammer.
It's played by a plank of wood with tits. I mean, that's really what it's
But she's... Like, there's been bad acting in Hammer films before.
Yeah.
But this is just like...
This is...
It's
this
like
is
a black hole of acting. It's like anti-acting.
This is... And this might be a disgusting, like, visual, but I'm going to paint it anyway.
Oh, good. Well, I made them.
No. Not disgusting like that. This is like...
Morally disgusting.
Yes. Imagine if there was like a psychotic serial killer.
Okay.
And his whole thing was to detain or kidnap women.
Right.
Keep them in a dungeon.
Okay.
But occasionally...
I'm stunned to see where you're going to go with it.
But occasionally, while mildly drugged up, he let them like enact plays for his like amusement. But they're like... Almost like drugged up like circus elephants or circus lions or whatever.
Right.
She acts like she was pushed on stage by a psychopath who drugged her up and demanded she perform this role. She plays the whole thing like someone behind the scenes. Like if she doesn't act the film, she's in real trouble when she gets back. But she's also kind of like scared, pathetic, not a very good actress, and drugged up.
Is this something that you've jumped about, right?
No.
Is this an ambition?
No, it's like a plot from a giallo movie. Like
yeah,
a weird giallo
movie.
where all you ever see of the puppet master is like a guy's black gloves and a trilby hat.
Yeah, with like Vincent Price overdubbing his voice because he didn't have to leave LA to do it.
Right.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So yeah, she's terrible. Anyway, so brother runs away from the sex comedy. And
only to fall into a
accidentally fall asleep in a carriage and then wake up at Castle Dracula, whereupon, and I love this.
Well, meanwhile, he gets kicked out of the pub by another woman who inexplicably finds him attractive.
No. She is one of my all-time favourite Hammer characters.
Julie, our last Julie.
Because the whole thing about the pub is, it's your classic, the piano stops playing, you know, silent treatment, we're not giving you nothing, get out for causing trouble pub, right? It's a what's that? Bad smell? That's not my food.
No, it just smelled like burning.
Oh. So it's your classic, sod off, we're not trying to give you nothing, get out of here, stranger, leave us alone, pub, right? So anybody that comes in asking any questions gets, first of all, the cold shoulder, then they get lied to, and they get chucked out in their ear. But what I love about Julie, the barmaid, right?
She's
completely happy to give away all of the information that everybody is blatantly trying to keep quiet. Like, hey, did you see someone come in here? No, we haven't seen anyone. No, I'm sure he came in here. Someone said he came in. No, nobody came in, I tell you. You looking for that bloke who came in? Oh, yeah, he went up the castle. They're all like, fucking Julie. But Julie also, in a big mouth. Every time anybody comes
also,
in, what's everything? Julie will tell him.
If you want to get rid of people and you know that the person everyone's looking for went up the castle, why wouldn't you just say, oh, yeah, him, he went up the castle? It's not that they're going to hang around. Oh, he went up the castle. Well, I'm going to stay here in the pub then and continue to annoy
with anybody. But they're like, oh, Julie giving it away again. I love it. She just blabs with no regard. She's totally oblivious.
Yeah.
To the pall of gloom and despair that hangs over the pub that's weighed them all down into this silence from which they will never escape. They are trapped by their own guilt and the horror of their own inaction. And she's completely oblivious to all of it. All she knows is, oh, yeah, that bloke you're looking for, he went up the castle,
also,
mate.
Also, she's the only woman in the village.
Yeah.
There's literally a few members of Dexy's Midnight Runners.
They do look like Dexy's Midnight Runners.
You know, this is the other thing that always amazes me about movies. First of all, there's no indication when this is set, but it's clearly set, like, probably Victorian era. They're all wearing suits.
Well, one of them fired a Luger at him when he went across the border. I don't think that's right.
And then there was like a lot of people are wearing like three-piece suits and stuff. But anyway, let's just say it's like turn of the century. And they put a casting call out for some heavies, some town heavies, right? And when a dude showed up with his Dexy's Midnight Runners haircut and another guy showed up with fucking highlights in his hair, why didn't they just go, come on, let's find two other people? They just went, oh, that'll do. Sling a leather waistcoat on him and get him to sit down in
the
bar.
The whole movie reeks of that. The plot is, that'll do.
The After Movie Diner with John Cross will return right after this.
The Be a VHS podcast is changing lives. Here's some testimonials. Bill from Tallahassee, Florida says, I was able to quit my job and get a Ferrari, just like Magnum P.I. Sue from San Diego, California says, wow, it really helped with my crippling depression. Thanks, Be a VHS. And Tom from Charlotte, North Carolina says, it cured my genital warts. Wow. Listen to the Be a VHS podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play.
Oh. You charmer. How'd you do it? Apart from my magnetic personality, I think it was the suit that got her going. Now, I'm not sure whether it was the lapels, the very fitted jacket, or the flare trousers, really. Now, if it's a stroll by the river in the morning, it could very well be the Cardin blazer. With, of course, the off-white raincoat in case of emergency. Or if it's back to lunch with her mummy and daddy, it's all down to the safari suit with a sexy collar. Of course, she thinks I'm loaded. Me, loaded. She doesn't know yet that I go to John Temple and get up to 2 years to pay. Around the same price weekly as 3 or 4 pints. Sandra, darling, be ready for me. I might break loose tomorrow.
You're listening to the sweet sounds of the After Movie Diner. Support us at patreon.com/aftermoviediner. Or I'll punch you in the teats. Rate and review us on iTunes, Earthling.
So, yeah, so anyway, brother goes up to the castle after being thrown out the pub. It's sort of a weird... It's another thing that doesn't work. They're trying to do a thing where he sleeps with Dracula's bird, and Dracula comes in just like the Burgomaster and discovers him and gets really angry and kills the woman and threatens to kill him. Like, that's the idea.
This guy is apparently completely... But it's like beautiful and attractive to every woman he meets.
But like, why... But Dracula's like runs in and kills it. What, you know, Dracula doesn't stab women out of jealousy. You know what I mean? It was just really weird. It's like he eats them. And if she's a vampire and she's hanging around, I don't know. It's like, it was very weird. That was never really explained what she was doing there, what the hell that was.
Also, but she's but a that vampire, does just stabbing her with that knife killer.
Oh, exactly. Well, yeah, apparently. It might, you know what I mean? But it leads to one of my favourite scenes in any Dracula film, which is his servant, Chloe, cheerfully wandering in with a bath. Right. Yeah. An empty bath, a sheet, and and like hammer and a saw. And we finally find out what happens. What happens to like hammer, like Dracula's victims after he's done? Because he sucks their blood.
Yeah.
And then they just disappear. So they disappear. The Chloe chops them up into little pieces.
Yeah.
You know, takes them out in the bath and presumably like slings them over the side.
No, he
or whatever.
Puts them in holy water.
Puts them in holy water.
Because her heart, when he puts her heart into the holy water.
That's right. Running. So, but while he's doing that, he's got the portrait of the blonde bird. That Dennis's brother had on him before Dracula ate him.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of looking at this woman wistfully while chopping another woman up into pieces. It's a very interesting, weird, odd, but very unique scene.
Yeah.
And so he's really good. Anyway, then it kind of cuts back to, and then it's like Dennis and Blonde Plank. Who go looking for the brother, which leads them to the pub, who throws them out, which leads them to the castle, which they escape from, only to go back to the pub, which then throws them out, and then they go up for like a denouement with like Dennis V. back. And by the way, like a lot of the Dracula films do end in kind of a lame way, but this is easily the lamest.
You think?
He holds up a metal thing, and at that point, he gets struck by lightning accidentally. It's terrible.
Well,
that's literally a Deus Ex Machina. It's
slightly better than the end of Prince of Darkness, where he like just falls into a slightly frozen lake.
I like that, because the point is,
I like that because it's like, well, we can't kill him, but maybe we can just like imprison him forever,
right?
Which at least is thinking, but this is like, oh, fuck it, I don't know, he gets hit by light. Like, nobody's got, you're supposed to have, like...
No, right, you're right, yeah, you're
right. As long as the lightning appears accidentally, you better watch out for that lightning, that could be important later.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. The monster of your whole movie, the whole reason people come to cinema is to see Dracula, and presumably a little bit to see how he died, he gets killed by accident, mate. He gets killed, basically, on the vampire equivalent of the golf course.
Right.
That's how he goes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how it is. And it is mostly awful. But I really like Julie the Mouthy Barmaid. I really like the servant who's forced to cut up bodies while like dreaming of a better life.
I really like Dracula has a room in his castle that has no doors in it but only one window.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
And the way he gets out of it is crawling up to a window that's on a higher level. And Lee coming out of the window and then crawling up the side of the castle is like a really neat visual.
That is cool. Although I think that's in an earlier one. I forget forgotten which one.
Is it?
I think so. Which I, he like crawls up in the...
Well, I know they do it in the Coppola one, but...
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I think you're thinking of the Coppola one, but the Coppola one gets it from this. So I really love that visual. I really like the visual of all the dead people in the church.
That was very cool.
I like the death of the priest, which is equally grim.
Yeah.
And that's probably about it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything...
Oh, I like all the... Like, when they show up at the castle, it's got all, like, the dry ice and stuff all over it.
That's quite cool. And the big gap to the... to the edge, that was pretty good. I mean, I think, you know, Clive should have killed him or done something.
Right. In general, though...
It wasn't a good one. I'm sorry, because as they say, I was a bit grumpy when I watched it first time, and I didn't really like it. But it's been long enough, and it is the last, like, period Dracula film that I wanted to give it another go.
Because after this, it's AD 72, right?
No. And you can see why they did AD 72. I mean, they're so clearly out of ideas in this one.
So, you know, the thing here is that with a slight tweak of the script...
Well, a better idea. They wouldn't even... They need to pick something. What's it about? Is it about...
No, I know. Look.
Huh.
When I say a slight tweak of the script, to make it... a watchable, enjoyable Hammer movie. Not to make it like the greatest Dracula film ever told, but to make it a watchable, enjoyable, folks go to a castle, get picked off, Dracula's trying to kill women or whatever it is, or to like get a new bride or whatever. Like, pick your fucking thing.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't need to be great, but they don't they don't pick a story to tell.
They don't, right. With a slight tweak of the script and with it with... Because I'm sorry, it's not even budgetary. People can go on about budgetary. It doesn't cost any more money to film at dusk or slightly into the evening than to film the whole thing in dappled sunlight, but then weirdly intercut it with, like, the castle set, which is clearly a set, which has, like, dark skies, dry ice, and lightning.
But she runs through a wood in the daytime and then turns a corner into a, like... a castle at night, which has come out of nowhere and nobody can see. Even though it's on, like, they go, the castle, where's that? Look up, mate. It's a huge fucking castle on a rock. It's apparently, half a mile away? Everybody can walk there in half an hour.
Right. So, if the production or the director or whoever's fault it was...
That's the thing, it's like...
Had literally just... I don't know, waited an hour for it to go dark slightly. Like, we're not talking about... Also, there are plenty of Hammer films. In fact, the one that comes before this, I seem to remember, has plenty of decent night shoots.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And look, I wouldn't even mind if you like... In fact, I'll go as far as to say this. Even the castle set, which has a painted backdrop, has a painted backdrop with light grey sky. They didn't even paint fucking night. All you had to do was use black paint instead of grey. What were you, out of black paint? Well, we used all the black paint. You used all the black paint. We used all the black paint on The Last Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's
was
true.
That Peter Cushing demanding, like, continuity? He was. Oh, fuck it. Oh, well. We'll do a slight light grey sky.
That's the weird thing, isn't it? Like, it's 1970, right? I think?
Yeah.
70. So Hammer's got a good 4 years, 5 years left. I think To the Devil a Daughter is like 76. We've got like 5 years left of Hammer. And like some of those films in those 5 years, I think the problem is, maybe, and I know this for sure, but it was written by the guy that wrote a lot of the movies, Anthony Hart. And it's directed by Roy Ward Baker. Although Roy Ward Baker goes on to do some better films than it. But like clearly none of them cared.
No, I'll tell you what it was. It wasn't written by Anthony Hines. It was whatever he had left in a book where he'd started three separate scripts. And they went, that scene.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And we'll have a denouement where he gets electrocuted and
Yeah, because the thing about, there's a story about a town that kills Dracula, gets punished for it by losing all their women folk, and then learns to, like, you know, confront him one final time, you know, even at the cost of whatever. Like, there's that story. And then there's a story of, like, a Lotharian who, like, you know...
almost has more power over women than Dracula does, and Dracula's meant to have, like, the ultimate power over women.
And goes in and, like, fucks up his, like, powerful relationship he has with his, you know, brides or whatever. There's that film.
And that Dracula's ultimate goal is to essentially have his woman in return.
Right.
It's like, suddenly, because of the photograph, this blonde woman takes on, like, this mythic proportions, almost like Mina Harker does in the original story. And there's really no justification or build-up for that at all. But, like I say, rewrite it ever so slightly, and you have it that, like I said, there's sexual Lothario that outbests Dracula at his own woman-wooing ways. And in, you know, petty vengeance, Dracula goes, well, I'll kill you and I'm going to have your woman, and I'm trying to get your woman to the castle at any cost, even if I have to use my large rubber, you know, five times
lose
too
the bats.
Big
whatever
bat.
You're going to do, lose the bats.
No, but again, with the bats. I don't know
where they've used fake bats before and they're all right, but this one is like, you're not even trying to
it's
disguise.
The same thing as Day for Night.
Yeah.
They just don't care. Like, there is a way to do it. Like, when the priest gets killed, you see the close-up bat. It's done a lot like Hitchcock's The Birds. You see the close-up bat that's moving very, very quickly. And you see him, like, covering his eyes and the blood coming out and the pecs and the things and da-da-da-da-da. And you're like, okay, that's an effective sequence.
Yeah.
Until it pans back and you see this little, like, I can't explain how overweight and doddery these bats are. They're enormous. They're enormous. They're like flying hairy pigs.
But you're right, they're very doddery.
And they don't go anywhere. They're just like, the puppeteer can't even be bothered. Even the puppeteer has one job. That's to make these bats even look remotely scary. The puppeteer's just like, will that work? A little bit of a flappy wing.
What's the bare minimum for a bat to be a puppeteer? Because that's what you're getting, mate.
I wouldn't be surprised if Roy showed up one day and was like, what?
No, nothing, I was listening.
Oh, if Roy showed up on set one day and saw the puppeteer and was like, all right, get rid of him, I'm doing it. And then, like, Roy just couldn't be asked.
Or it was like Roy's nephew or something, do you know what I mean? Like, Roy's nephew that nobody can do anything with.
Right.
Well, maybe he can operate. Can he operate the bats? Can he do that? Well, we'll give it a try. You're right, literally nobody is trying, except, that's what I'm saying, right? Actually, now I think about it. Troughton isn't trying. Clove is trying. He's given it his all. He's yellowed
well,
his teeth.
Just has to show up.
Especially for
no,
the,
that's
for the
how
bath.
He looks.
He's no, he. I looked. He yellowed up his front teeth, and he gives it the beans. And he's quite similar. Like the bit where he turns his back, and you see all like the burns, and you believe that he's going through this thing. You know, between his, like, you know, loyalty to his master and this love of this woman, which is really about a life he can never have. Like, that's something's happening there, and you believe it. And even Julie, the mouthy barmaid, she's trying. I mean, she's not a terribly good actress, but she's trying.
Do you know how I know?
Is not trying either.
Do you know how I know nobody gave a shit?
No.
Her name's Julie.
Oh, that was the bit in when Dracula goes, this, meet Tanya. And I was about to go, hello. Hello, I'm Tanya.
She's an exchange student from Australia.
Hello, I'm Tanya. How you doing? You all right, love? You know, it was like, what the, Tanya and Julie. This is the best thing to come up
well,
with.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Literally.
Oh, and this is Simon, and this is Paul. Like, Jesus, really?
Also, but then see, this is what I've never understood about Hammer.
Okay.
Just set it in England. Like, if you're not even going to care, if you're not even going to give people
that's why I vaguely
German or Bavarian sounding names, why go to all this problem of being like, well, there's a Burgermeister and we come from Leinheimer or wherever they say they come from? Why even bother? Why not just say, well, we come from Chelsea and our name's Jeff?
Well, that's why Taste the Blood is good, because Taste the Blood is Dracula comes to England.
Right.
And there's a whole, you know, that's why I like it, because there's a whole thing with Taste of Blood about, like, they're like the exploitative Victorian scumbags, basically, like the bored, decadent, like, buckets of shit that, you know, that were in Victorian London at the time. Like, they're under no illusions, like, they're properly evil.
Right.
And, like, Dracula does them in one by one through the medium of their own, like, using their own children. Basically.
Right.
He turns their own children and their children kill them. It's really cool.
Yeah, movie. This definitely felt like, well, you know, it's 1970, we should have a Dracula movie. What have you got, Hyman? And he went...
You know, it does read, like, leftover scripts, and that's probably why it's in Kleinberg and Clover's there, and it's like, the Clove storyline is probably from another one too. It's like,
right,
three or four different movies all flung together.
Right.
Because that's what they had left. I'm pretty sure the castle set is from Lustre of Vampire, I think.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that, but I have a feeling it is.
And it's, I tell you what, though, it's a shame, because there are some pretty effective visuals. And I feel like, and I think at this point I've watched just about, this is probably the last Christopher Lee Dracula that I hadn't seen. Because I've seen the two that come before this. And then I've seen Prince of Darkness and Horror, which come before those. And I've seen 72 and Satanic Rites, which comes after this. This is the one that I hadn't seen. And it's certainly the goriest of any of them.
Yeah.
It's the one, I mean, I know AD 72 has like goblets of blood and whatever in it, but it's not the same.
No, it's not body, like people being torn up.
And like, it feels like they kind of did something there. You know, like they, you know, it's Hammer, so it's not been, like, you can see, especially, and again, they played this on a Blu-ray, which is kind of unfortunate, because you can not only see the line of Christopher Lee's wig against his forehead, but you can also see, like, when Clove shows his back, you can see the theatre wax that they've used to make the scars and everything. Like, it's very haphazard, and a little bit of grain on the film might have covered some of that up. But that notwithstanding, because obviously they didn't foresee that technology, the gore sequences are pretty well done.
Yeah, agreed.
And pretty graphic, and actually quite dark, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, we were talking before the movie, but it's often leveled at Hammer that, you know, the reason why the studio dies of death at a certain point is because their brand of, like, gothic buxom horror doesn't play well in the 70s when you have stuff like Texas Chainsaw and Halloween and the giallos from Italy and various other, and the zombie films and stuff, which are either high on gore or have the ability to tell contemporary stories, which these don't. You know, and when they do take Dracula to, like, modern times, although Satanic Rites at least has a good idea behind it, neither movie is particularly put together that well. And there's this idea that, you know, sadly at that time, you know, even Cushing and Lee are no longer the draws that they were. And it's sort of annoying because, like, you see what they did in this one and you think, you know what, if you took some of the money from setting it in a period of time and used that to your effect and put that on your effect and just set everything going forward in contemporary times and told whatever stories you want to about axe murderers or whatever, the filmmakers and the ideas and the scripts and various other things are still there.
I think one of the problems
to kind of continue
is that it was,
it's just a shame they don't.
I think one of the reasons why it's successful is from the late 50s, basically to the late 60s, they were making, you know, pretty good, pretty consistent, fun, well-made horror films. One of the reasons that they're able to do that is they, you know, they're shooting at the same studio. So, and they're using the same composer, the same DPs, the same directors,
right,
the same writers. So it's a bunch of people who know what they're doing.
Right, there's a stable of people. Yeah.
Right, and I think one of the problems is that in 69, what happens is they're all just, like, you know, they're a bit old and they can't hack it anymore. You know, and that's what's happening in this movie. Like, I don't think the writer wrote another one after this. Roy Wilbaker did do a couple of films afterwards, but they were, like, different ideas. And the movies that work in the 70s, once they try something different. Dr. Jacqueline's Sister Hyde is really good. Hand of the Ripper is good. It's not quite there, but it's nearly really good. Even Countess Dracula has completely brilliant beginning and a great setup, but they just don't make as much of it as they should. Anyway, my point is they use different directors. That, like, the director for Countess Dracula also did Taste of Blood. That's why it looks a little different. It's got a little different feel, and it kind of works. And I think they could have done that, but I just think they, whatever that core was, it was a bunch of people who they, you know, like you're saying, like, before Giallo comes along, before Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this idea of churning out, like, well-made, well-acted period horrors with a little bit of sex and a little bit of violence was just what people wanted in the 50s and the 60s. You know, it's like, this is perfect. It's like, we're waking up to, like, sex and violence, but we're not, like, in the decadent, you know, nihilist era of the 70s yet, where, like, who cares about, you know, love? This is all, you know, it's about violence and horror and, oh, my God. And so they're hitting some kind of sweet spot. We're also, like, they're on the, you know, they're on the bill for these drive-ins, and they're quite cheap to make.
Right.
You know, so they're putting out, you know, 2, 3, 4 films a year. And, you know, they're all of pretty reliable quality, too. Like, people who are at a drive-in, like, oh, it's a Hammer film. You know, so they're like, it's going to have Kikuchi, it's going to have Lee, it's going to be Frankenstein and Dracula, it's going to be, like, the universal horror, you know, but updated for a new generation. So there's, like, you know, more sex, more violence.
Right.
And I guess there just came a point where that wasn't enough anymore. Financially, the Italians could do it cheaper because they just, like, filmed it in Rome with whatever bastards they could, like, find.
Right.
And they just had, like, weird, you know, obviously insane directors who pointed the cameras in weird ways and shot deaths in, like, weird, crazy, disturbing ways. And that's what people started to get into. And it's like, they tried to do, they did their best, but even this film seems like, what, a little bit like waving the white flag. Like, let's just...
But then what's weird again is that, and I know everyone disagrees with me, but, like, by the time you get to Satanic Rites, they actually have, like, a really interesting idea that would be so worth exploring. Like, at the beginning of this movie, the very beginning, Dracula is, like, again, and again, this is something that they're rehashing from Prince of Darkness, where he is ash in a coffin and Clove slices the neck of one of the British visitors, drips their blood onto his ash, and he comes back. Because he doesn't appear till, like, almost halfway through Prince of Darkness. It's mostly, like, Clove and the townsfolk and all that. At the beginning of this, he's like a mound of red ash.
Yeah, there's no continuity.
Red whatever.
He dies in a church in England.
At the end
in,
of...
In Taste.
Right. So at this, he's a big pile of red dust lying on a cloak. And this fucking bat comes in and vomits blood onto his ashes, which then recorporealizes him. And because I'm such a fan of Satanic Rites, which is basically Dracula being like, all right, enough already. I get it. I'm eternal, but I've had it. I've had it. You know what I mean? I'm constantly plagued by people trying to kill me. I can never be killed. And when I am killed, these fucking people just keep, like, bringing me back to life, you know what I mean? Whether it's Clove, whether it's this fucking vomiting bat, whether
the bat, the vomiting bat.
And what I really wanted was, I really wanted Lee to wake up, having been brought back to life, and instead of be like, "Oh, the bat brought me back to life," and then he looks out into the window, literally into light, like you literally see him put his face into light, and I'm like, nobody cared. Like, at that point, I knew.
Yeah.
I mean, if the bat hadn't been enough of an indication, I was like, all right, I'll forego the dodgy bat effect. But then Lee just comes right up and sticks his face, like, right into light. I'm like, well, all right, clearly no one gives a shit at this point.
That's one of the weird things too, but, isn't it? Sorry.
No. But I really wanted Lee to wake up, see the bat, see that no one else is in the room, so clearly the bat brought him back to life. Grab the bat and just be like, ah, what did you do?
Like,
I really wanted that to be.
Yeah.
And instead it was. Instead he was like, bat, tell me more. You know, like, it was just.
Yeah, and he's like talking to the bats, which is kind of weird too. Like, what? No, she's safe. And then the bat's like,
no, I've seen her.
Oh, well, the bat says otherwise. But one of the weird things too, which I kind of liked because it was so odd, was, you know, normally he's like, oh, hello. He's always like plays the charming host.
Right.
Like normally, Dracula in the castle, like young beautiful people turn up. And he's like, oh, hello, you must be lost in the storm. Do come in. I'm a count, you know, very important. And they go, oh, what a lovely place you've got here, count. Yeah. You must stay the night. The storm is terrible. You know, that kind of thing, right? And this one, they turn up and he's like, yeah, all right, who are you? Yeah. Oh, I'm lost in the storm. All right. Want a drink? yeah, I'll have a drink. And then he starts complaining about how they burnt his castle. And I go, oh, was it an accident? No, the villagers done it. They burnt my house down. Why'd they do that? Oh, change the subject. So, just to be clear, man who's just walked into the castle, the bloke who's taking you in is wandering around complaining about how the villagers burnt his castle down.
Yeah.
Trying to kill him.
Yeah.
It's probably...
Yeah.
There might have been a reason for that.
Also, this was...
Don't just go to bed upstairs in the man who the village want dead's house.
You've reminded me of something else. No one in this movie... You were saying about the repetition.
Yeah, yeah.
No one in this movie ever gets to eat. There are about five or six scenes where people go, I'm so hungry. And the person goes, well, I could make you some Spam or whatever. And the person's like, oh, yeah, that sounds bloody lovely. And then just as they're about to eat...
They get thrown out of the pub.
Every time.
Well, there's a bit where she's like about to have some broth.
Right.
And Dennis runs into the room. And instead of going, no, don't eat the broth, which would suffice, he throws a rock at her soup and like covers her in broth. He's like... Your method for stopping people eating is utterly unique, Dennis. Most people are content with verbal communication.
I would love, though... I would love a TV series, though, from the 70s, where Dennis Waterman is like a poison detective. And there's in every episode, there's a scene where someone's about to drink some poison. And he doesn't have time to say, don't drink the poison. Instead, he just lobs shit at them.
I know that. He's like a Jeremy Beadle figure.
Right.
Like, don't eat that broth! Exclamation mark. And every time people are in, like, well-to-do restaurants about to eat their broth, Dennis Waterman runs in and throws a rock at their plate. Comes and goes, don't eat that broth! Don't eat that broth! You know, with his, like, Dennis Waterman don't eat that broth theme tune.
Theme song, right. It would have to
that
be.
That would be the thing. But, yeah.
I will tell you what to do. Don't you eat the broth, dude.
Don't be no sloth. Don't eat that broth. Something like
I will come in and throw a rock at you. I will tell you what to do.
Because I'm Dennis. Yeah, it's,
Dennis.
He's no good. She's no good. Lee's phoning it in.
Lee? Okay.
Michael Ripper is phoning it in, and I never thought I'd say that.
The one thing that is... I have to say, was joyous for me watching the movie was the faces Lee is making.
He was making some comic faces.
He
knows what he's doing,
faces.
Right? Because there's a bit where he can't look at... Like they also way over-exaggerate the tiny crucifix.
She has a tiny, tiny little gold cross.
Dracula's like... He's a bit like... He's like surprised by crucifixes.
Right.
But usually he just like... does this thing with the eyes and they take it off for him.
Yeah.
That's usually what happens.
Yeah.
Not like, move across, move. But he's like, you can't even look at it. And he's making like Python-esque faces.
Yeah.
Right? It really reminded me of like Palin or Chapman or something. Yeah. Or Jones. He looked very like...
Very Jones.
Like Terry Jones expressions.
Oh, but that was another really great bit that Lee had where Dennis and the bird, Blomplank, first come to the castle... And
she did look Swedish, so her name might well be like Denise
Blondie Plank. Blondie Plank. Might be.
Denise Van Blomkamp.
Blondie Plank. But the fact that Lee just like clothes like, oh, you know, the bedroom's all ready, and Lee just whips, like picks her up and walks her out.
That was really good.
That was amazing.
That was great. That was really, really good. Because Walter's like, I was going, what are you doing with me bird?
Yeah.
Can I just pick up me bird and carry her out of the room?
Also, he's weird because sometimes he plays it like a total fop, and other times he's like, roll up my sleeves, climb up the wall of a castle and possibly try and kill Dracula. Like, on one hand...
yeah.
On one hand,
well,
he's like...
he's not a character.
On one hand, he's like, well, yeah, sure, take my woman off to bed. And on the other hand, he's like, I will kill
and
you.
And yeah, he's like, oh, my brother fancies you. She's like, well, I'm very attractive to your brother. But all women are. But I, you know, I like you. Oh, yeah, I'm well convinced.
Well, that works.
I'm well convinced.
That works.
It was. So I'm sorry about that, because I think probably...
No. There was no bad experience about watching it.
No, that's true. But it's probably my least favourite Dracula.
Oh, yeah, of course. But there was still...
There were still things to be enjoyed, for sure.
Yes.
And it is a fun experience just sitting in the cinema.
There was mad faces.
Watching an old Hammer film.
But the whole, like... naked bird running downstairs and the big mustachioed bergamot
like
bursting
comedy
in.
And the bats. It was just full of bad decisions.
But it's also really bad because, like, she's like, oh, he touched me and he inappropriate and blah, 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 blah. And, like, the bergamaster grabbed him, like, did you rape her? I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, we're making kind of, like, farcical slapstick jokes about rape. I mean,
And then he, like, chases her up the stairs.
Yeah, and she's all like, oh, ducky. Like, it's just, it's awful. It really is, like, on the buses, Dracula on the buses.
That's so strange.
In fact, that would have been amazing if Lee had shown up on the buses, and that guy with like the sad face.
Well, he would have
gone,
made those faces.
Yeah, he would have been like, I can goggle eye with.
I bet he did appear on like. I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I bet he did appear on like, I don't know, Morecambe and Wise or something like as Dracula, like for a few quid,
right?
Comicking up. Is like, yeah. Dracula persona. I'm like, that's what this like felt like.
Yeah,
it's a shame, but it is fun to watch them on the big screen. I do like Trout, and I love Julie, the loudmouth barmaid who ruins everybody's like plans, and also sends everybody off to their death.
But again, way to completely undermine a character, even in the 70s, to have her. She buttons up her nightgown to go down and answer the door to her guest, and then thinks twice and unbuttons her nightgown. Then when he comes in, she's all like, look at my breasts, and keeps like trying to open her nightgown at him, and immediately like succumbs to him within like 30 seconds. Then he gets chased out of the pub, because everyone gets chased out of the pub. Then later on, these two, we didn't even mention these, the two, like, not really very comical policemen show up.
Yeah, they were trying really hard to be comical, but they forgot to write any jokes.
Right, yeah. It's like someone watched an episode of Monty Python and went, oh, that thing where one imitates the other guy, do that, like, for a scene. And then she's, like, puts herself in between the two, and she's all trying to be like, hello, like that, and I'm just like... And then there's like these jokes about it was just because she's not like that the rest of the movie. Like, it's not like the rest of the movie.
Because it's like, it's part of it's like a sex comedy. Now, all those bits are like, well, we need laughs, so let's like do some sex comedy. It's really weird. It's like what's even Dracula film? You're doing sex comedy?
It was literally like Confessions of a Dracula Bride or whatever, like that.
Yeah, Confessions of
Robin Asquith had played Dennis's,
and we know he
brother,
could. No, you're right.
If Asquith had played the brother, but yes. Then you would have had to believe that people inexplicably found Asquith attractive.
But apparently they do. Like, we've seen films where that happens.
Well, yeah, but normally when he's running around in tighty whities, being like having bubbles blown on him or something. Or...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
he's not like there's not a lot of sex in Asquith movies. He just wrestles a lot of like topless women.
I wonder if like some
covered
of it,
in blancmange.
I wonder if some of it is that.
There's such a deep... There's such a deep rift of, like, weird... Like, a chasm, almost, of weird British sex films that are not known, like, anywhere else. I mean, even if the words Carry On are known, they're still, like, second tier and third tier, like, just... And the thing is it's not like the 80s American sex comedies where at least the women are half decent and like there's at least some kind of concept to them. This is where everyone is ugly and just grim and 70s and beige, and it's just, but it's so fascinating that they're out there waiting to be discovered. Or maybe they weren't discovered and someone went, but put them back. Just put them back under the rock and let's leave them there.
Well, it's just, you know, the equivalent of the saucy British postcard and all that kind of thing. It's just, and I wonder whether with Ham, so much of it is to some extent opportunistic. Like, they're not these guys are not horror purists. Like, they're not out.
No,
they made a whole bunch of films, and they did crime thrillers, and they did psychological thrillers, and they did horror. And the thing that exploded was Frankenstein, was The Curse of Frankenstein, and it made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And Dracula made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we'll just do this thing.
Yeah.
And so everything from that point on is, and so they just tried to replicate, like Frankenstein was set in Germany and Dracula was set in Romania. And so they saw no need to make them in England because, well, the formula that worked
right.
was doing it in a foreign country. And so that's why some of the later films are interesting, because they've got money and they've got the chance, you know, they know they have to take risks at that point, because
yeah.
Lee's getting on and Cushing's getting on and all their directors and even the producers are like 80 and retired at this point,
yeah.
they're the producers' sons or whatever. So they're taking risks, and some of them, you know, either come off or nearly come off, and some of them don't at all, but like they're trying things. But this one feels like, you know, the acme of, well, what's working right now? Like, so I bet you, like, sex comedies were, like, big, like, the year before. And, you know, so they, like, flung a bit of that in. It just, nobody cares. Nobody even believes that they're doing anything that's not, you know, that everybody's just tired,
right.
seems to me. It's a shame. I hope the next one, I hope Vampire Circle. Well, I'm hopeful The Vampire Circus, which is the one we're going to be watching next, is more like what we're talking about, because it has been a long time since I've seen it.
Right.
But I'm hoping that will be like the more like weird and trying something new, and it won't quite come off, but there'll be enough there to
right.
be interesting and to be like, you know, they're trying to be more violent and more weird without actually like really having a stomach for it. They won't, you know, because they do still want to be making like prestige pictures. But with like B movie money,
right,
and a B movie audience,
you know? I like that. It's almost like this. It's a prestige podcast with B movie money
and C movie hosts. Well, no, B movie B host, C guest, C/D,
and D money.
And D money,
because yeah. we're not money.
We are not.
Nothing about us is money.
Nothing.
But thanks to a lot of generous Patreon
wonderful,
donators.
Glorious, magical human beings all.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much, Jim, for
thanks,
yet another
for on,
Hammer Horror episode. And I look forward to next week's, which will be the last
of the Hammer
Horror series. Don't forget, if you've been enjoying this series, you can check out all the Hammer Horror reviews from The Bloke Down the Pub. And by golly, are there many.
And
they are
and
tremendously good reviews. I have often used them because I get sent a lot of the Hammer reissues
oh, yeah.
by Mill Creek and people
cool.
who are putting them out. A lot of the rarer ones, a lot of the weirder ones. And I often go, well, what did The Bloke Down the Pub think of this one that I haven't heard of before? And I look it up and I go, huh, The Bloke Down the Pub kind of enjoyed it, so maybe I'll give it a go, see what I think. So I do use it as a good reference.
The Awesome Movie Diner is in fact a useful site.
Oh, it's a phenomenal reference guide. One day we will publish the complete works of The Bloke Down the Pub. I have every intention of doing that, of self-publishing Hammer Horror
After
reviews,
Movie Diner books.
Yeah.
What would you call it? AMD books? Or After
No,
Movie
I'd call
Diner
it
books?
The Bloke Down the Pub.
No, but I mean, like,
Hammer
Horror. What would the publishing imprint be? Would it be AMD books?
Sure, all right.
How about AMDB? Because that sounds a bit like IMDB.
Sure, okay.
All right. You have a little logo and everything.
Alright, we're already you're worrying way too much about that. I'm talking about like the only thing is we need the rights to the posters.
Well no, we could do our own art, couldn't we?
Yeah, well like Shop Marathons did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so someone has to draw 40
plus
pictures.
Well, no, I mean you just have because if you can do it as an ebook, you just have the reviews.
Right.
You just need a cover.
Right.
And someone draw a cover.
Oh, I could do that. We could get Peter Osmond.
Yeah.
Who did the caricatures of you and me.
Yeah.
We could do him drawing, like, a bloke down the pub, and maybe, like, Dracula is the bartender,
yeah.
and...
I quite like your cartoons and stuff. I think you draw quite a good cartoon, like, down the pub.
No, I'm not good at perspective and all that stuff. The way I'm imagining it, like, the corner of the pub would be down here, and he'd be sat here, and there would be other characters, Frankenstein and Dracula and
that's
like
a neat idea.
All
yeah.
hanging about and I wouldn't
that.
Be able to do that.
No.
Whereas Peter could. Peter Osmond is the man. And if you have any artwork you need doing, I'd consider calling Peter.
Cool.
Peter is my graphic designer slash comic book artist slash genius, nice Welsh bloke.
Very cool.
Anyway, thanks so much. Goodbye.
Cheerio.